From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
California goes to the polls as Governor Gavin Newsom faces a recall election. What's at stake and does the recall movement have a shot? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, editorial board member Alicia Finley and editorial writer Jason Willick. 19 states allow recall elections, but this is not an everyday occurrence, and particularly with a high office like a governor. Gavin Newsom is only the fourth governor in U.S. history to face a recall vote. And the only one of those governors that survived was Scott Walker in 2012. But the polls today suggest Newsom might become the second. And Jason, I guess the place to start is with the process today. It's sort of an odd two-part ballot. Can you explain how that works?
Sure. So the first question that voters have to answer is yes or no on the recall. So yes or no, do you want Gavin Newsom to continue being governor of California? If more than half of people vote to recall him, he's out. And then you move on to the next question. And the next question is, who do you want the replacement to be? And there are, you know, dozens of candidates. And you select one. The leading candidate is Larry Elder, who's showing up at about 22% in the polls. So it's a weird situation where, you know, if more than 50% voted to recall Newsom, then he could be replaced by somebody who gets, you know, far fewer than 50% of votes in the next question. So it's a two-part question, yes or no on the recall. If you got 50%, he's out. And then it's just the highest vote getter on the next question takes his place.
Yeah, and that does lead to some strangeness, and particularly because people who vote no on the recall, I wonder if there is a good number of them that don't fill out the second part of the ballot. They'd say no to recall, so they're not going to pick one of those candidates on the second part of the list. And that leads to some additional strangeness and unpredictability, it seems to me, in these results. And another quirk, of course, of this California recall system is the low bar for people to get on the ballot. I believe in this case, there are 46 candidates that can be chosen from on the second part if Gavin Newsom is recalled. And the leading Republican to replace Newsom is Larry Elder. Alicia, you interviewed him for a journal interview back in August. Just give us a sense of who he is and what his pitch to voters has been.
So he's been a radio talk show host and on the local and actually national markets for the last 30 or so years. He's very well known. You know, he's probably began talking a lot about the welfare and how the destructive effects on families, particularly the Black community. But he's really expanded and has been focusing, at least in recent years, much more on the California problems, homelessness, lousy schools. I mean, he talks a little bit, you know, talks or speaks to some national issues like, you know, immigration, but really has been focusing on the day-to-day problems that a lot of Californians are seeing in their lives, especially, as he said, homelessness, rising energy costs, gasoline prices. So he's a well-known figure in the state, and which makes him, you know, probably the most likely candidate to replace Newsom if voters were to recall him. That's still a question that's up in the air, and I think polls do show that Newsom has pulled ahead. But you know, Larry Elder has definitely made Newsom, you know, elevated the recall and the stakes in it.
Yeah, COVID-19 and the state lockdown policies, I think, is also part of the debate that's been going on. And particularly, it seems to me, Jason, that was something that helped push the recall petition over the top. I think it was 1.5 million signatures that were required to get this recall on the ballot. And I mean, if Gavin Newsom hadn't been photographed there at the French Laundry eating dinner at a party in violation of his own COVID protocols, I'm not sure that they would have gotten those 1.5 million signatures.
Yeah. And just some background on the recall and California democracy. I mean, California is sort of known as a pioneer of direct democracy going back 100 years to the progressive era when it started to have these ballot measures, you know, or legislation just voted on directly by voters. And the recall is sort of, you know, conceived in that tradition of let's give voters, you know, more direct say, you know, let's sort of bypass, you know, traditional processes to give voters more direct control over their governance so that, you know, they can replace the governor even between regularly scheduled elections every four years. So you did have this sort of outpouring of anger and discontent. And California is, you know, a supermajority Democratic state, but you had a very mobilized minority of Republican voters, especially, you know, outside of the major metropolitan areas of Los Angeles and San Francisco. You know, you go outside of those areas and California looks like a much redder state. So you had lots of people angry about the general sort of trends in California, including, as Alicia mentioned, homelessness, you know, a sense that that these coastal areas are prospering at the expense of the rest of the state, crime, immigration, and then, you know, COVID may have been the straw that broke the camel's back and really motivated signatures for this recall because it became a cultural issue. And Gavin Newsom was seen as aloof. But, you know, I think that, as Alicia mentioned, they've now really managed to turn the tide. Gavin Newsom has managed to turn the tide, including on COVID, and saying, you know, Larry Elder doesn't know how to manage COVID. And, you know, there may be a minority of Californians that are angry about Newsom's draconian lockdowns. But, you know, if we elect Larry Elder, you know, COVID's going to rip through the state and it's going to be out of control. So I agree that COVID has been a big part of it, but it's also a culmination of trends in California for decades.
Well, Alicia, do you have any other thoughts on how Gavin Newsom's COVID response, I guess, what he's done over the past year and a half, and how that debate is playing out in the context of this recall?
Well, I think voters were initially really upset with the lockdowns. As you guys both mentioned, the French Laundry dinner, the contradiction, the hypocrisy. And then a few weeks later, he banned outdoor dining. And I think, you know, shortly thereafter, you know, cases started surging anyways, right? It didn't really matter what Newsom did, you know, the lockdown. You know, California had one of the highest or biggest surges in the winter. Things kind of like receded as vaccines rolled out. And, you know, California, relative to other states, a lot of other states during the summer, hasn't been hit as hard as, you know, for example, Florida or Texas. And Newsom is kind of taking credit for that and saying his policies, and, you know, he has actually rescinded almost all the lockdown policies and the mask mandates, but he has required that healthcare workers get vaccinated. He has required that nursing home workers be vaccinated as well. And some local school districts do require masks for students. And so he's kind of been pointing to what's the problems in Texas and Florida and saying, well, if you elect an Elder or if you recall me, you know, that's going to happen here. And I think that has really scared voters, people who, you know, didn't support his lockdowns or, you know, are troubled by some other things happening in their state. They don't want to go back to what happened during the winter.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
Join The Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. So, Jason, how much could a Republican governor in Sacramento really change? I mean, some of the things that Elder keeps talking about are this this proposition up in San Francisco that essentially, you know, decriminalized in a sense shoplifting, which has created all sorts of problems. But that's not something that the governor has control over. And the state legislature is very Democratic. There are 40 Senate seats and Democrats hold 31 of them. There are 80 assembly seats and Democrats hold 50. So what could a governor Elder, if that's the alternative here, what could he get up to Sacramento and do?
Yeah, well, I think I keep going back to the larger context of California, which is, you know, it's been trending very much blue for decades. You know, lots of people don't remember that, you know, this was the state that produced Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon. But in the late 20th century, it really took a turn. There was even some thought that Pete Wilson, who was a successful Republican governor of California in the 1990s, you know, that if he had run for president in 2000, that he could have won California in 2000. If you can imagine that, the idea that a Republican winning California. But that's just how far it's flipped. So it's just moved very much blue. I think that Hillary Clinton won the state by about 30 points in 2016. So as you say, there's a very blue legislature. It's a supermajority. A governor cannot govern the state against the will of a two-thirds supermajority in the legislature, but he can be, you know, a blocking force. He can veto things. He can, but frankly, I think, you know, there's another election in 2022 in California. So even if Larry Elder won, he would be up again in just a few months or just under a year, and a new legislature would be elected. But, you know, I think the real impact of this is not so much for California's governance, but rather, you know, directly. But it would just really, if he were to somehow prevail, it would just send a shockwave through California politics and through national politics that big changes are afoot. But you're right that in terms of the mechanics of governance, I mean, you have statewide elected officials that are independent, like the Attorney General and the Secretary of State. They're all Democrats. You have, you know, the state Senate and the state House of Representatives. They're dominated by Democrats. You have a state Supreme Court that's dominated by Democrats, although, you know, a governor, of course, can appoint new justices. But you're right that this is a state that's been transformed and has become, you know, the most progressive state in the country. And managing to install a Republican governor would not change the governance direction of that state overnight.
But it could change some of the framing. And this is one of the points that I took from, Alicia, your interview with Larry Elder. I mean, he said that he would use his bully pulpit, that he would use his veto pen very aggressively. I like this quote from him. Elder said, Arnold Schwarzenegger, even though he was a semi-Republican, vetoed hundreds of bills. Not a single one was overridden. Because what happens is you veto a stupid bill, you go public, you explain why the bill was stupid. And the next thing you know, the phones ring in the state senator's office. And so I suppose he could change some of the framing of the political debate in Sacramento, Alicia.
You know, I think that is the hope. There are a lot of bills that kind of squeak through and don't get a lot of attention. I mean, this latest bill that would ban so-called production quotas on Amazon warehouses, that got a little bit of news attention, but, you know, wasn't really actually analyzed. So, you know, Elder could veto that bill and say how, you know, explain why this is actually, you know, harmful to workers and as well consumers who may have to wait longer to get things delivered. There are a lot of things, you know, pushed through by, you know, the trial lawyers and other, you know, green special interest groups that just don't get the attention or scrutiny that they deserve. And Larry Elder can make these issues, campaign issues, especially like another one is education. That's not necessarily a matter of a veto, but that's a school choice is something he could really elevate that hasn't been. And it's expected that there's going to be a ballot initiative in next November 2022, that would create education savings accounts, which are kind of like vouchers that would allow parents to use the dollars that would normally go to public schools to take them to private schools or use them for tutoring or other kind of educational services. I think that this initiative actually has a good chance of actually passing after the school shutdown during the pandemic and parents have been exposed to just the poor quality of their, children's education. But, Elder could really help elevate and go campaign for this initiative. And I think he still will do so as, if he doesn't win and become and stays on the airwaves. But, you really need someone taking the lead and charge statewide, whereas the Republican Party really doesn't have anyone at this point.
But one thing that the governor of California can do on his own is appoint someone to a vacant U.S. Senate seat. And that, I think, spooked a lot of people as Newsom's numbers began to decline here. Senator Dianne Feinstein is 88 years old, and should she retire or have some sort of health issue, we have a 50-50 Senate, and whoever replaces that vacancy would essentially flip control of the Senate potentially. And Jason, it seems to me that when the polls tightened here in this recall, that piece of it got a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, there's another Californian from San Francisco, Justice Stephen Breyer, and the left, the Democratic left, is furious at him for not resigning. And I could never really understand that. Who cares if he resigns, now or next year? The Democrats hold the Senate, and they'll hold the Senate until the 2022 elections. Well, maybe not if there's a vacancy. So I think that's part of the concern was, you could have Larry Elder getting in with Dianne Feinstein late in her career, having been removed from the Judiciary Committee and so on, flipping control of the Senate, and then ultimately denying Democrats the chance to fill a Supreme Court slot. It's a long shot, but I do think that was part of people's calculations because, as you say, Larry Elder would appoint a Republican and would flip control of the Senate. That said, I do think Dianne Feinstein is going to finish her term. And I don't think that Larry Elder is going to get the chance to appoint a replacement. But I think you're absolutely right that, the way that this figured into national politics and even Supreme Court politics was part of voters' calculus. And one of the reasons why, frankly, that California, a deep blue state, was always going to revert back to its political hue and probably re-elect its Democratic governor and not a Republican insurgent, even though the polls were tight at the beginning.
But in the meantime, the Democratic Party has really brought in the cavalry to save Biden here. To save Newsom here. President Biden was out in California, and here's part of what he said. He said, "The leading Republican running for governor is the closest thing to a Trump clone that I've ever seen in your state." And Alicia, that's an interesting message here going into the recall. Do you think that will have an effect on voters?
I think the Republicans actually really tried to downplay the candidates, their association, or any link to Trump. And I think also, Democrats were running that message, for a couple of months, and it really wasn't gaining much traction. It wasn't until Newsom started running the ads on COVID and scaring voters about COVID that the polls started to shift. I think voters can distinguish between Larry Elder and the other Republicans and Donald Trump, or at least it may help rally the Democratic base potentially. Though, as Jason mentioned, I think there are other issues at play. For instance, they use like the Supreme Court seat potentially being, up for grabs. So I'm not really sure that this is actually making a difference. You kind of made I wouldn't even consider it a slip. You said that, Biden is trying to save Newsom, but Biden's also trying to save Biden here. The worry among Democrats is if Newsom goes down, if Newsom loses, that could also make a lot of House Democrats in swing states a little more afraid and cautious about voting for this $3.5 trillion bill. So, they're really also trying to save their national agenda here.
And so the polls, we should say, have done the reverse of tightening now. I mean, in August, it looked like it was kind of a dead heat. Now the 538 average of polls has Newsom up, or has the recall, no on recall, up by about double digits, 15 points maybe. Jason, is that kind of what you expect tonight? Do you think those polls are accurate?
Yeah, I mean, California, like I said, has all of these ballot measures where the voters are voting on big things. And you generally want, in order for voters to change the law, you generally expect it to tighten as it approaches the final stretch. You know, voters might say, oh, I'm open, you know, I'm open to this, and it looks close, you know, a ballot measure that would change this or that. But then as the election gets closer, you generally see people get cold feet about making a big change. So you generally, I think the rule of thumb is, you know, you want to be a few points ahead, maybe even 10 points ahead, you know, in the months coming up to a ballot referendum in California, in the expectation that it will tighten as voters go to the polls and that they'll revert to the status quo. So I think that's basically what's happening here. You know, voters were sort of toying with the idea of replacing Newsom, but as it became more real, you know, they reverted to the status quo. So, you know, I guess we have seen a polling error in recent years, especially polling error tilted in Democrats' direction. So I would not be surprised if it's closer than the polls show. And I think, you know, even if it is, even I think Newsom won by about 62%. He won about 62% of the vote in 2018. And if it's substantially lower than that, that, you know, if he gets 55% in 2021 in the recall, I think even that is a little bit of a rebuke to him. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's closer than the polls show, but it looks like it's a really long shot for it to for the recallers to get over 50% that they need.
Alicia, what do you make of this question? I mean, if it's tight, is it a rebuke to Newsom, or if he wins by a handful of percentage points, can he make the claim that he's vindicated and he's coming out stronger out of this recall?
You know, I think if it's tight, it is a rebuke. The fact that the Republicans still made it tight, as Jason noted, I think Newsom won by about 24 points in 2 years ago, or 2018. And, you know, Democrats have a 2-to-1 voter registration advantage. At this point, you know, it shouldn't be tight. So if it's within a few points, I think, you know, it still is a resonating message to Democrats and what voters really feel about their progressive agenda.
Thank you, Alicia. Thank you, Jason. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.